Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Jason Eisner's 2011 film Hobo with a Shotgun. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Hey, just call me Podcaster with a Ladies Pistol.
Wait, what?
Talking about Hobo with a Shotgun, so you can just call me Podcaster with a Lady Pistol.
Oh, I see.
You know, one of those, the ones they pull out of the purse and only has one bullet.
Right, or like the ones that people used to use in the Old West for like disputes and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, like when it pulls out of their cufflink or something and only has one bullet.
Right.
The extent of my violence.
Nice, okay. Well, if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, and you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So I've got the character... What's that?
I assume there's no voicemails this week.
No, no voicemails. If you guys... Please. Interested in any hearing any voicemails, leave them yourselves and then we'll read them.
I've run out of celebrity impersonations, at least for the ones that I did. I think I did one or two.
Yeah, right.
I mean, all the rest of them are celebrities.
They were totally real, Colin.
Yeah, I only have two, so I'm out.
Yeah, spoiler alert, Tim Thomerson from the Trancers and Dollman episode was actually just Tyler.
It was real. That was not one of mine.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you're bad at this. You should let me,
All right, so the character name game, I've got that this week. And Tyler, you know the rules of this, but for people who have never heard before, I'll...
Guess the movie.
Yeah, you just guess the movie that this character is from at the very end. So the character's name is Terrence Terry Mann. M-A-N-A.
Terry Mann?
Terry
Mann. Got it.
Mann. So be thinking about that as we go through, and then it has to be... in some way related to a movie that came out in wide release this past weekend. So, or I guess that just came to theaters or whatever this last weekend. So maybe that's a hint right there. Anyway, let's go to the media consume section. It's part of the show. We talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to, things of that sort. Tyler, what have you been consuming this week?
Well, I just finished Party Down, the series.
Oh, nice. Okay. What'd you think?
Surprisingly short series as a whole, I would say. And, much like Arrested Development, I think there should be more organization on trying to get more of this show made, even though a lot of the characters and the actors behind it are doing other projects. Party Down was really solid, both season one and season two.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just liked the characters, and I liked their I-don't-give-a-shit attitude, even though things kept happening to them. I think that's the best kind of comedy is... things happening even though you don't want them to happen, and then like just being thrown into certain situations.
Yeah, and just having them get progressively worse.
Yeah, and I like the idea of then the first episode or so, the girl is just immediately freed up like by getting a divorce. Like for the Office, I always got really frustrated because Pam was always engaged for like a good amount of the series.
Mm-hmm.
But in this, she was like, I'm married, and everyone's like, ah. And then she gets a divorce by the end of the episode, and everyone's like, hey. So as an audience member, you're like, yay. potential.
Yeah,
instead of
exactly.
Her having to talk on the phone and having that bullshit to deal with, that drama.
Yeah.
Jane Lynch was funny, I guess. Yeah, I liked it when Megan Mullally came on.
Yeah.
I like her a lot more. Because I think she's just generally nice while at the same time funny, and Jane Lynch is just kind of weird. I don't really care for her comedy. And freaking Ken Marino from Children's Hospital, which is also what I'm going to talk about in a second. Like, everybody just pretty much sold it, and like the guest spots were really funny, especially when Steve Guttenberg played Steve Guttenberg.
Oh man, that's my favorite episode of the entire series.
Like, freaking everyone, he's just like, hey, why don't we just have a party? And like everyone just shows up, and yeah, it was pretty badass, because I don't think a lot of people can remember that Steve Guttenberg was pretty much in everything for a good portion of the 90s, if not most of the 80s and 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a go-to guy.
And, just the ending of the series was kind of leaving me down, because I know there isn't any left, so
mm-hmm.
I might steamhead the production of season 3. So
just shoot it in your backyard with
just me. It's just gonna be me, and it'll just be me with a camcorder, like stalking Lizzie Kaplan, and we'll go from there.
Good luck.
Thanks. The other thing I was watching, and I mentioned Children's Hospital. I watched season 1 and 2. Also really funny. Like a lot of people, you know, this is like good comedy right now. Like Party Down, Children's Hospital, all these kind of comedian-driven shows. They're like ideas that these comedians come up with them and their friends, and then they have all their friends show up on the show. Like, that's just stuff that I really dig. Like, I don't really care that writers want to write this comedy. Well, if it's not funny, then why is it on TV? Like, all of these shows are really funny, therefore should always be on TV, I guess is what I'm saying.
I see.
But Children's Hospital, like, I think now there are 15 or like 12-minute episodes, I guess. But this was back when it was still a web series.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really short. I think they're like, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes long. And it's pretty ridiculous because I think it's a lot funnier now because I think the episodes are longer so they can do more. But seasons 1 and 2 are more, I guess they were just getting their jokes across because the first couple episodes were mostly characters. And you didn't really, like if I was just watching this for the first time, I wouldn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to watch all of them to finally get it. And I think I had season 2 first before I got season 1 because I mixed the discs up.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched all of season 2 in like one night. And that was pretty, I think it was like 2.5 hours or something.
So you got these on disc through Netflix?
Yeah. Party Down's on Instant. Children's Hospital season 1 and 2 is on disc.
Okay.
And but then I watched season 1, but all of season 1 was like 40 minutes. So it was kind of a change in length of time.
Yeah. So also, are you saying that it was comprehensible in the way that you watched it when you watched season 2 first? Or are you saying, because I thought you just said something like, if you just jump into it, you need to go back and watch all of it.
I'm talking about someone who just gets season 1 on a disc and starts watching, like has never heard of it before. I think it would be kind of weird for them, but I've kind of watched, like I started watching like one episode, and I was like, all right, that was pretty funny. And then couple months went by and I started watching the series.
Oh, I see. So just to kind of get your palate ready for it.
You have to understand that it's not going to be like a drama that's funny. It's completely out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's on
some of the jokes aren't going to play and you have to look for certain things. Like you're, I don't know, like an 80-year-old, if you show it to your great-grandma, she's probably not going to get a lot of the stuff that's going on because it's just stupid funny as opposed to, like, you know, 1930s radio show funny.
Right.
I don't know what I'm trying to say. It is weird. It's out there, but it's also, that's what I like about comedy is when it's really out there and weird.
Yeah, and I think
Not weird to the point where you're uncomfortable, but weird to the point where it's like, why did they even write that down? That's
yeah.
Like, who would have thought of that? That's kind of my humor.
Yeah, I think that's like, you know, the show's on Adult Swim, right? On Cartoon Network. So, yeah, that's kind of a good, that's all you really need to say for people as far as, like, tempering expectations.
Yeah.
About, like, showing it to an 80-year-old. Anybody who watches Adult Swim is probably only in a certain type of demographic range, I guess.
True. Yeah, like, people saying, like, Big Bang Theory and, like, all these comedies, quote-unquote. I mean, Big Bang Theory is funny, but this is a lot funnier.
Yeah.
It's just smart.
Okay.
I mean, Big Bang Theory is smart, too, I guess, to a point, but they can't be too smart.
Yeah, because it's network.
They're gonna lose all their viewers.
Yeah, network shows have, like, constrictions in that they have to be as broad as possible. And these shows, especially ones on Adult Swim, are, like, so niche that they can have that freedom, like you're talking about, to just go as far, you know, as ridiculous as they can with stuff because they know that only the only people watching it are the people who've seeked it out, you know, like, you know, are looking for it specifically, basically.
And what I like about Big Bang Theory, though, is like some of their jokes are niche, but they're surrounded by jokes that are empirical. So I pick up on all the small nuances that they drop, like science talk or comic book talk or whatever they're talking about. Like people usually don't laugh when they make a joke about, oh, you know, space sector or the Green Lantern space sector or something, but people who actually know what they're talking about thinks it's funny. So I think that's why it's kind of a smarter show. But again, these shows like Party Down is a lot smarter.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because it's a simple concept, but it's the things that are happening that's funny.
Yeah.
I guess that's why maybe The Office was funny I thought originally, but then it kind of lost its steam.
Yeah, well, I mean, any show that goes 8 seasons is bound to go downhill at a certain point. But then I'm thinking
like maybe Party Down should be what it is, like with season 1 and 2, because season 3 you could just kind of see them talking about, you know, Henry going and doing his acting thing and getting maybe a little more tied down by the drama. But yeah. I just like when they show up for work and there's stuff going on at work. Like, I don't care about what's going on in their outside lives. I like their lives at work. Because I think I used to have jobs like that, so I relate. Not exactly like that, but...
Yeah. Yeah, Party Down is fantastic. And as you mentioned, it is available streaming instantly on Netflix right now. And that actually leads us into the first thing that I wanted to talk about, which is the internet kind of exploded last night when Reed Hastings, who's the CEO of Netflix... put out this letter and sent it out to everybody who subscribes to the service, basically apologizing for the whole blow up of, you know, the separating DVDs and streaming and changing the prices and all that kind of stuff. You and Kate and Allison, I believe, talked about that on the Weekend at Bernie's episode, right?
Episode 48.
I think that's right. So he kind of, goes into this big explanation of what he was thinking and tries to make amends for that. But then at the same time, he makes the situation even worse by revealing that Netflix is now splitting the DVD by mail service into an entirely separate website called Quickster, Quickster. And
yeah, I call it Dickster.
Nice.
That's what they did. They dicked us over.
Good one. So, I mean, in all fairness, like, not much is going to change as far as payment goes. Like, the payment options are still going to be the same. The only thing that Quickster really means, for those of you who are, whatever, interested in this but haven't read the email, I guess, is just that it's going to be a separate website. The queues are not going to be compatible anymore, so you're gonna have to keep up a separate queue of DVD items as opposed to just being able to kind of blend the two as it is right now. And then they're gonna change the logo, stuff like that, and you're also gonna be billed two separate, you're gonna get two bills basically, one for Quickster and one for Netflix. That's if you keep the DVD service along with the streaming. Of course, if you just go to streaming only, then you'll only be dealing with Netflix. But for somebody like me who, you know, watches a lot of TV shows on DVD and stuff that aren't available on Instant, I like to keep that DVD option. And now I'm going to have to start dealing with Quickster. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on this whole thing?
Yeah, I'm dropping Quickster as soon as I have like a couple more DVDs coming in. Yeah. And that's it. Like, I don't want to... Like, I'm already paying as many bills as I can, and now Netflix is split up into two more bills. And unless they start offering, like, more substantial stuff on streaming and they fix the streaming, like, I should have perfect viewership all the time. There shouldn't be any skipping. There shouldn't be any loading. Like, if this is what they're going to do, they're going to have to provide us at least with some newer movies. And I know they're going to be like, oh, well, you can go to Quickster for that. But I don't. I want to pay Netflix to do that. I don't want to pay another company, even though they say, oh, it's the same company. I don't like paying two different things if I'm getting, you know, and then you're going to have bad service or good service with one and not the other, or vice versa.
Yeah.
So it's just a whole mess.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they're doing it. I don't know if they were losing money or something. Well, but I think I know it's expensive to ship them, and maybe they want to get out before the post office goes under or something. They don't want to put any of those losses on the Netflix name. They want to put it on Quickster.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what people are kind of pontificating about in the internet world since this announcement dropped. People are saying, like, this is a clear indication that – and this is just conjecture, mind you. But people are saying this is a clear indication that Netflix wants to get out of the DVD game entirely because, like you said, those costs are so expensive, and because Netflix as a company has lost a lot of money in the past couple quarters or the past quarter or whatever. They're down like millions of subscribers because of the price hike that just happened. So they're trying to just jump ship, and people are saying, like, this is the indication that they're trying to get out of the DVD game, because they're splitting it up, and also because they named it something so colossally stupid and just a terrible name that they want it to fail. That's kind of like the overreaching vibe I'm getting from the people that I read online anyway.
Right. So. Well, they're also expanding it to video games, and I guess if you're into that, that's going to work for you. But yeah, I mean, people who only want to get DVDs, they're not going to be many of those people, because streaming is so convenient and we all have computer on our TV in some capacity or on our digital devices, let's say. DVDs, the only reason people get DVDs is so they can watch things that aren't on streaming yet.
Yep.
Like, once it's on streaming, it's not like, oh, I'm going to still get the DVD.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't watch any bonus features, so I don't need that disc.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all I want to do is watch the movie. If I can't find it on streaming, I'm going to either find it in the store to buy it, or I'm going to wait till it's on streaming.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I should have mentioned that about
Quickster.
I should have mentioned that about the video game thing. That's the only, that's another kind of downside to it, is they say, oh yeah, we're opening up to video games, but they also say it's going to be an upgrade option.
Yeah.
Kind of like it was for Blu-ray. Like, I pay an extra whatever it is, $1 or $2 a month or something to have access to Blu-ray. And this is going to be the same thing. So on top of that, you're also going to have to pay more for the possibility of getting video games in the mail. It's just like, and that's probably going to count. I'm sure it's going to count as your one DVD out a month. So it's like, it's not even like you're getting both. You're still getting one or the other, and you have to pay more for it. So yeah, I don't know. Netflix seems to be scrambling to try to figure out what's going on in this business climate right now, and it seems like they are in a position where they should be able to call the shots instead of having to freak out and just wildly change things. Like, they're clearly the predominant force in the streaming world right now, and in like just rentals in general. So they should be able to just kind of do what they want instead of freaking out and like kowtowing to every sort of stock, you know, investor's demand or whatever. Yeah. So I don't know.
I mean, it's so easy because DVDs, I don't know how cheap they are, whatever. You buy a spool of DVDs, you have the movie on file somewhere, I'm sure, like in a digital form. Like, can't you just print like 5 copies of that movie? You have to have like individual DVD copies of each movie. Like, I just don't see the price problem here. Like,
yeah.
You can just mass produce a bunch of movies that you have the money to.
That's illegal. I'm pretty sure.
No, I mean, they have, you know, they've paid to ship out these DVDs so many copies of whatever movie, you know, if copies lost, they can just reprint a new one. I just don't see the problem here.
Yeah. I think
like, there should be like 30 copies of The Dark Crystal for people to rent out, let's say.
Yeah.
Or more. Whatever. There shouldn't be like, you know how when you put like Fast and Furious. Fast and Furious is a pretty popular movie. I put it in my DVD queue and it says long wait. I'm like, why? There should be like 5,000 copies of that laying around.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to wait a long time to see Fast and Furious. And it's on USA anyway, so I'm just going to watch it there. Suck it, Netflix.
Okay, well, let's move on. there's one other thing that I wanted to bring up, and actually I've already mentioned the Weekend at Bernie's episode where you and Kate Erbland and Allison Loring
that's one of our great episodes
spoke
Sorry,
about Weekend at Bernie's and Weekend at Bernie's 2. And I was reading slashfilm.com the other day, and friend of the show Jermaine Lucier, who was on our podcast to talk about Slither a while back, actually wrote up this article, and the title is WTF, Two Men Reenact Weekend at Bernie's in Denver. And I'm going to read some of this article here.
Does he mention our podcast at all?
No, he doesn't.
I'm
going to quote him here. So he says, as reported by the Denver Post, Robert Jeffrey Young, age 43, and Mark Rubinson, age 25, have been charged with, quote, abusing a corpse, identity theft, and criminal impersonation, end quote, of their deceased friend, Jeffrey Jarrett. They're both currently out on bond. And I'll continue here. He says, the story is that Jarrett had invited Young to live with him while Young was between jobs, and on the night of August 27th, Young came home and found Jarrett dead. Instead of calling 911, he went to Rubinson's job, and the pair returned back to the apartment where they loaded the body in the back of Rubinson's SUV. They then went to Teddy T's Bar and Grill and drank on Jarrett's tab while his body was in the back seat of the truck. At that point, they brought his body back to his apartment, took his ATM card, got some Mexican food, and then withdrew $400 to go to the strip club. Wow. Once that place closed, the pair flagged down a police officer and said Jarrett's body was at his apartment. So
that's awful.
That basically is a real life reenactment of Weekend at Bernie's. I just wanted to get your take on that.
Well, you know, I'm all about humor at the expense of the deceased. But this took it a little too far, I think. I mean, the strip club, what was the other restaurant?
Teddy T's Bar and Grill. And They also got some Mexican food.
So. These aren't prominent places, people. If you're gonna take your buddy out for one last ride, you know, take him to the Mirage or somewhere in Vegas. Dude, make something of it. Yeah. I just think they didn't have 100% of their heart behind it.
Yeah, go big or go home, indeed. So, I thought that was worth mentioning, considering
the fact also, they should have called the cops right away.
Yeah, that would help, too. Okay, so I wanted to talk about this one thing. Tyler, I don't even know if you know that I got a chance to do this, but I think this was last Monday night. I got a chance to go to the 30th anniversary screening of Raiders of the Lost Ark. This was held at the Regal, like, LA Live Theater downtown in Los Angeles, and Jeff Boucher, the main guy behind Hero Complex, which is a really awesome blog that the LA Times has where they talk about, like, superhero stuff and just kind of geek-related things. He was doing a Q&A with Steven Spielberg there. So they played the movie. I was fourth row, which was fantastic. And then Spielberg came out and did this Q&A, and they talked about the movie. It was really awesome. And then Harrison Ford came out and, like, surprised the crowd with this unannounced appearance, and everybody just went insane. And they talked for, like, 40 minutes about a ton of different stuff. I wrote up a big post about it at GeekTyrant.com, so people can read it there. Just go to GeekTyrant and type in Raiders of the Lost Ark in the search bar, and you'll find it. And, yeah, it was just – I mean, Tyler, as you know, this is one of my favorite movies of all time. This and Back to the Future are pretty much, like – this, Back to the Future, and Tombstone are, like, the big three for me. And I don't know, man. Like, it was really cool to be able to see this movie on the big screen, because obviously it came out before either one of us was born, and this was the first time I'd seen Raiders of the Lost Ark on, you know, in a theater before, and it was just a really cool experience.
Nice. Get Harrison Ford's Skype address so we can have him on?
No, I didn't. I didn't get a chance to do that. I did get a chance to meet Damon Lindelof afterwards, who is one of the co-creators and showrunners of Lost, and talk to him about the show and stuff for a little bit, so that was really cool.
Is that still a thing, Lost? People still talk
it's
about
not.
It?
It's not really a thing anymore. It is a thing to me. Yeah. It's my favorite show ever. But Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright were also in the crowd, just, like, there, just watching it, because this movie is, like, it's so universal that, like, even these huge people, like, want to come out and check this out. So this was also the first time that Harrison Ford and Steven Spielberg had ever publicly spoken about the movie together in any sort of interview capacity or whatever. So it was really cool. They talked about how Harrison Ford was actually Spielberg offered the role of Alan Grant in Jurassic Park to Harrison Ford first, and he turned it down. And they talked about how they'll probably make another Indiana Jones movie if George Lucas ever gets around to writing one. Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, Harrison Ford was supposed to be the teacher in E.T. too.
Oh, was he? I did not know that.
Yeah, but Spielberg said no because he thought he'd be too big of a star and would steal away from the story. So
he interesting.
Picked some nobody.
Okay.
Pretty sure that's true.
Okay. All right.
You should have asked that during the Q&A.
Yeah, I should.
Everybody would have been wowed, and then you could have got Harrison Ford's Skype name so he could have, you know, shown up for Trancers 2 or something.
Right, yeah. But I just wanted to point this out to people that Tyler and I reviewed the entirety of the Indiana Jones series at notjustnewmovies.com, so if you want to read our take on the movies and stuff, I think, Tyler, you covered Temple of Doom, right?
I only did the one everyone hates, Temple of Doom.
Okay.
And I liked it. I liked that one, so
yeah.
Sue me.
I just reworked the archives page at notjustmovies.com, so you can go there, check that out, and you'll find them all under Indiana Jones, I think, is probably where I saved them alphabetically. But
probably.
Anyway, moving on, I just wanted to bring that up. That was kind of one of the cooler events I've been to out here. But in the meantime, let's go ahead.
You can find all that stuff at Geek Tyrant, you said?
Yeah. I wrote up like a big kind of
We'll link to those articles.
recap post. Yeah, we'll link them in the show notes, and I split it off into a couple other posts about like the Jurassic Park thing and some of the other stuff, so you can read more information about it there. So.
Yeah, I don't think they should. I think they should try for maybe a World War II themed Indy 5. I don't think they should do a in the 60s kind of deal. I think that would be stupid.
Well, when was Crystal Skull set? Do you remember?
Crystal Skull, I think, was supposed to be 1957.
Okay.
But they could bring back Harrison and give him like hair dye, and put him and Mac back in like the British Secret Service or whatever they were working with. Because like they referenced it in the movie, and I was like, "See, that's what this movie should be about," is what I said to myself. Because, like, that's the next logical step with Indiana Jones and World War II.
Mm-hmm.
But they skipped over that completely and did this whole, "Oh, it's got to be so many years after the last movie," and places them in the 50s, which I guess was all right.
Yeah, and I think that would actually fit in kind of chronologically with the series too, because the weird way that Raiders of the Lost Ark comes first, and then Temple of Doom came out after that, but it was also set before Raiders.
Yeah, it was 1935, Temple of Doom, and then Raiders was 1936, and then Last Crusade was 1938?
I think so.
So World War II hadn't even started yet.
Yeah.
They have all this stuff they could do, and like Hitler was going after the Spear of Destiny. Mm-hmm. At one point, which would have been a good... But instead, what do we get? We get Alien Skull.
Yeah, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Not good. Yeah. Anyway. Okay, well, let's move...
Although the first half of that movie was good. I'm going to give it that much. It was the alien part that I didn't like. Like, the movie was good. Just the alien part I didn't like. Didn't care for.
Okay. All right.
I liked the fridge. I thought that was funny.
Oh, nuking the fridge. All right.
I loved the fridge part. I thought that was funny.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Hobo with a Shotgun.
Harold, brand new and perfect. No mistakes, no regrets. People look at you and think of how wonderful your future will be. They want you to be something special, like a doctor or a lawyer. Hate to tell you this, but if you grow up here, you're more likely to wind up selling your bodies on the streets or shooting dope from dirty needles in a bus stop. And if you're successful, you'll make money selling junk to crackheads. They won't think twice about killing someone's wife. Because you won't even know what was wrong in the first place. Maybe you'll end up like me. A hobo with a shotgun.
So, Hobo with a Shotgun was directed by Jason Eisner. It came out in 2011, actually premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, 2011 Sundance Film Festival, and I saw it there. And a little bit of a background for this movie. It was actually made as a fake trailer for a contest for a movie called Grindhouse that came out in 2007. This was a double feature with a movie from Quentin Tarantino called Death Proof, and yes, Planet Terror, directed by Robert Rodriguez. They made them a double feature called Grindhouse, obviously in an homage to these old Grindhouse exploitation films, and they also held this contest to see if anybody can make fake trailers and stuff that just, you know, that's how they used to do those double features back then. They would throw these kind of crazy trailers and stuff in between these mm-hmm. movies that all kind of fit in the same vein, basically. So Machete was another one of these fake trailers that has also been blown up into a feature film starring Danny Trejo. And Hobo with a Shotgun was one that won this contest. And it was directed by, like I said, Jason Eisner. He's a Canadian filmmaker. And they, after the success of this trailer, everybody loved it. I liked that trailer more than Tarantino's Death Proof, actually. after the
success, hack. Just kidding.
After the success of that movie, or I'm sorry, of that trailer, they decided to give them a little bit more of a real budget and actually clearly made the real movie. So they ended up scoring Rucker Hauer as the titular hobo, which I thought, you know, think is like a pretty fantastic casting decision. But Tyler, what was this your first time seeing this movie? What did you think about Hobo with a Shotgun?
Yeah, it was the first time I saw it. I'm glad I did. It might be one of the shittiest movies I've ever seen. Now, don't take that the wrong way. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just, this guy has to go through so much shit to get his job done. So I'm going to put that under, and there's like a lot of just terrible stuff that goes on. So I'm going to say the shittiest movie ever.
Okay.
Like, you know, like when you come home from work and you're like, oh, hey, honey, how was your day? And you're like, it was pretty shitty. And it's like, oh, well, did you wake up in a shopping cart and have to, you know, sit up through someone's chest cavity? And you go, well, no, I didn't have to do that. And you know, no, that's a shitty day right there is when you have to do. And, and all this stuff happens to him.
Yeah.
Hobo with a Shotgun. So you understand my use of the word.
I do. Yes. Well, with that being said, did you like the movie or no?
Oh, I loved it.
You loved it. Okay.
You know me. I am adrenaline driven.
Okay. I do know you, and I know that sometimes things can go a little bit too far with you.
Yeah.
And I think this movie, in my opinion, goes a little bit too far. And here, I liked the movie a lot when I came out of Sundance. This was like one of my top five movies that I saw there, just because it's so ballsy and it's so over the top in a way that I've never seen before. This is the most violent movie that I've ever seen.
Really?
I think so. Can you think of anything more violent?
I was thinking like Saw's. I don't know. There's been some good ones.
I mean, I feel like some of the Saw movies are, but those like violent instances are kind of like confined to certain plot points along the movie. And
yeah.
this movie, I feel like it's just you walk down the hobo walks down the street, and some like the most depraved acts of all time are going on like on either side of him. Like there's no sense of like, okay, this much time has past in the movie, so we need something crazy to happen. It's just craziness right. All the way through.
Yeah.
So
well, you have to, and I knew this from the beginning because it was a, you know, slash, or not a slasher, but a grindhouse film.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the stuff is going to be over the top, fake.
Yeah.
Looking like the guy holding his genitals because they just got blasted with a shotgun. Like it was just clearly just gross looking. But at the same time, you're like, that's not realistic. I mean, he's got to be dead at this point.
Right.
Or the point like where the first guy goes into the glory hole at the very beginning where they put the barbed wire. Like, I was pretty tense at that point because I didn't know, like, okay, is this going to be really real or is this going to be really fake? So I was like, okay, I'll keep my eyes open. And, like, it just whopped off. And I was like, that's so fake.
Yeah.
And here's one of my critiques of the film. Like, the neck stays in the
yeah.
lid. You would think the body would fall down into the sewer. No, he stays there, and the blood just starts fountaining out of his neck
right.
While someone dances in it. So, I mean, I was cracking up at that point, so that kind of set the tone for the entire film.
Yeah, so for those of you who didn't see the movie, basically this is the glory hole, as you refer to it, is a thing that the really evil character in the movie, whose name is
The Drake,
he refers to him as such, or he refers to himself in the third person as The Drake,
yeah.
And he basically puts he somehow, like Wild Wild West style, surrounds someone's neck with a sewer manhole cover. And then removes a normal manhole cover from a sewer and then puts that person in there so they're just hanging
yeah.
from their neck.
Which technically should rip them away from their head.
Right.
If I have any idea,
right.
I'm pretty sure that's a jarring
yeah.
event when you're slammed into a hole like that. You should be decapitated on sight.
Right, or at the very least, like, bite your own tongue off or something.
Horrible. Or, you know, break your neck.
Yeah.
yeah. any of those things. But none of that ever happens.
So he puts this person, or multiple people in the movie, in this position, and then he wraps a barbed wire noose around their neck and attaches it to some sort of moving vehicle, and then drives away, so the person's decapitated. And as Tyler mentions, it makes no sense the way that they did it, because once they're decapitated, that's the only thing holding the weight of their body up. Up, and then at the same time, the second that they're decapitated, a fountain of blood spews forth, and a woman comes out in like a mink coat, dancing in the blood, just to be disgusting. Yeah. And there's really no mention
of disgusting, or was there some meaning behind that, Ben?
No, there's no meaning. There's no hidden themes or anything like that really in this movie. It's all just like exploitation at its finest, I think.
Yeah, I think that's why I enjoyed it so much, because it's. You know, we talk about movies where you don't have to think. This is like the perfect, where you don't have to think, but you'll also enjoy it a hell of a lot more because of it. Because you're just like, I'm waiting for the next horrific thing to happen. I can't imagine what it is. Oh, yep, they went above and beyond the worst thing I could think of.
Yeah.
As far as like, I was, when he was standing near the babies in the hospital, I was really thinking that they would somehow, these babies would be involved, like just on fire being thrown at each other.
Yeah.
I don't know. But no, it didn't happen. Spoiler alert.
Well, yeah.
The other thing I made that was pretty funny was at one point, Rucker Hauer gets captured by the Drake, and the Drake goes, to the glory hole! And I don't think they had called it that yet.
No,
they didn't. So I was like, as Rucker Hauer, I was like, oh, that doesn't sound so bad. And then, of course, he realizes that it's the sewer drain escapade again. I was like, oh, that's the glory hole. Okay. Like, it was going to work out fine for them because they're going up the glory hole.
Yeah.
That means certain death.
Yeah. The Drake is so sadistic, and his two kids, one of which is played by a guy named Gregory Smith, who is in Small Soldiers, if you remember that movie.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Small Soldiers. Toys that come to life.
Yeah. I think one
Toy
of them
Story
is.
Except Island.
Yeah, well, I think one of them is voiced by Tommy Lee Jones, if I recall correctly. But anyway. These two kids are just like, I mean, Gregory Smith plays a guy named Slick who is kind of trying to top the Drake all the time and like live up to his legend. And they just do the most. I mean, okay, listen. So if you're wanting
so many horrible things.
Yeah, basically, I'm trying to lay this out. If you guys haven't seen this movie yet and you're wondering whether or not you should, if you can handle the most brutal, grotesque, but yet fake violence that you've probably ever seen, and you can handle excessive vulgarity in some of the, like, in a way that makes little to no sense, but is also as insulting as possible.
Sure.
If you can handle all of that, then watch this movie. That's what I would say, right, Tyler? Would you back me on that?
Yeah, I mean, if you're light of heart, you're going to be, you know, pure white by the end of this, and you know, probably not going to want to eat for a couple days.
Yeah, but I think there is a certain level of novelty to it where it goes so. I mean, the entire movie is novelty, to be honest. It's called Hobo with a Shotgun, for God's sake. But there is like a level where you're talking about, Tyler. You're waiting for the next thing to happen, so you're always waiting for the movie to top itself. And it's just like you never know exactly how far they're going to take things.
Yeah.
And then,
but then they go that far.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there's something to say for that, just as like a spectacle. You know, like I would say this is kind of equivalent of watching something like, I don't know, like an Avatar, like a Transformers or something. You know, like something that's on like a big platform like that, just to see like what the next big action scene is going to be. It's the same mindset here, except you're just looking to see what the next depraved, like horrific act that somebody is going to commit is.
Yeah, but yeah.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, like, yeah, you make a good point, and that's also why I like it, is because we see these movies nowadays, and sometimes they're good, and sometimes they hit a certain formula that we've seen before. Mm-hmm. This is one of those movies where almost every scene you're going to be like, I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
And it kind of, I mean, they're horrific, terrible, awful things, but at the same time you're like, I'm really really broadening my horizons by watching Hobo with a Shotgun. Like, I've never seen this in film before.
Yeah.
Like, you could come up with a whole slew of things that sound terrible, But are you really ever going to see them done in film or otherwise? Like, no, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But this movie actually did that. Like, they go, they sit at the table and they're like, let's talk about the most terrible things that could ever be done to a human being.
Yeah.
And let's make a movie about it.
So I guess just for perspective, we should point out a couple of these things. There's like an arcade of death, basically, where people are riding around in bumper cars, getting their heads like just smashed into oblivion.
Famous thing in the movie.
Yeah, that's one of them. Yeah. One of my favorite ridiculous lines comes from, of course, the Drake. I mean, who else? And the Drake is on the phone. There's a man hung upside down behind him, and three or four topless women are just beating him with baseball bats for no particular reason.
They had nails. I think there were nails in the baseball bats.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds right. And then the Drake is having a conversation with his son, Slick, and at one point says, when life gives you razor blades, you make a baseball bat covered in razor blades. And he holds up that very thing and then turns around and, like, hits this guy in the stomach as hard as he can, and it just slices him open and all of his intestines fall out. And it's just blood is pouring and gushing everywhere. So, I mean, that's one thing. Another thing is the school bus. Tyler, what'd you think about that?
Yeah, that was, I mean, cheery music. I'll give them that. But, man, that is horrific.
Burn, baby, burn.
And then not only that, they bring one of the children onto a live news broadcast. And they're like, look at this! You want your kids to look like this? Then kill all the hobos!
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh my god!
Yeah.
But yeah, there was one of the games in the Death Arcade where instead of like the bell that you ring with the sledgehammer, it was someone's foot.
Yeah.
And like you just see a foot and all of a sudden it's just exploded into blood and bones. And you're just like, wow, this movie is...
Yeah, so they do not shy away from the gore here, and I think because it's just, the movie, this is the best, like, exploitation, it's the best exploitation movie that I've seen, you know, including both of those in Grindhouse, and I've never seen the full Machete movie. Did you end up seeing that one, Tyler?
No, we need to do one on Machete, and then we need to do one on Black Dynamite, because I really wanted to see that too, but I couldn't find it in theaters.
Okay.
But I think it might be on Instant. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I think
one of those throwbacks as well.
Yeah, excluding Machete and Black Dynamite, neither of which I've seen. I think Hobo with the Shotgun is probably the best because it kind of captures like the you know, just that sense of depravity that we talked about, and like that really gross, brutal, over the top, just kind of the reason that people would go to see these movies is like, you know, you and I used to watch terrible movies on purpose just for like to see how terrible they could get. And I feel like that's what a lot of these movies were back in the 70s and 80s. Like people would go see these movies with the full knowledge, of course, that they're going to be awful, but just to see, like you said, stuff that they'd never seen before and like see, these kind of different directors like doing their, you know, kind of working out these different ideas within their genre in a way that had never been done. And I think this movie kind of does a really great job of moving that forward, if you could call it that. And,
right.
And by that, I just mean like kind of blazing new ground and doing things that's so over the top and out there that it feels like something that you've never seen. But at the same time, it also has a feeling of like, you know, with the grittiness and just the camera, the way they use like fisheye lenses and the kind of aesthetic of the movie, it does feel like movies that you've seen before, but the stuff that actually happens in it is stuff that you've never seen. So
yeah, and they're fun to watch, and they have to be a blast to make.
Yeah,
I just think I would have nothing but nonstop fun just blowing things up and making red corn syrup and smashing them with different weapons.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I've seen a couple of old exploitation films too that were really awesome. Just because, like, you have that like 70s groove music in the background, and like I want to talk about the music in this movie in a second. But yeah, and like car chases and people just getting owned, like if somebody's brother is killed and this guy just goes across town and kills everybody associated with the killer until he finds the one guy, and then there's this shootout. And, you know, they're just simple movies, but they're fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of, like, Bruce Lee movies, I think, were exploitation films in a sense, because like martial arts movies, you're gonna exploit the martial arts genre in some way or another.
Yeah.
And you know, a perfect movie right there, martial arts and a grindhouse film put together, martial arts and excruciatingly gory violence. $1 million right there.
I think that's what Black Dynamite is to some degree.
Okay.
Which, you know, obviously neither one of us has never ever seen, but
there's write us in and tell us about it.
It kind of reminds me of like those old Charles Bronson movies, you know, like Death Wish and stuff. Like that's what you're talking about. It's very formulaic, but there is like a sense of catharsis that the audience gets of like seeing this person who has wronged the protagonist in such a way get their comeuppance at the end, you know?
I've only seen Death Wish 4, but I remember it being pretty awesome. I think he defends an apartment building.
I want to say he has a rocket launcher in that one.
Oh, I'm sure he does. Yeah, he fires it down the hallway, I think.
Okay, all right. Awesome.
I don't know. I watched it when I was like 9.
Okay, all right. But you wanted to say something about the music.
Yeah, the music was awesome in this. Like, not just the songs that were added to the soundtrack, but I think, you know, musically speaking, like
the
composed music. Yeah, like some of it would be almost like 80s horror film, but then they would switch it up and it would be like synthesized again, so mm-hmm. it would have kind of like a poppy sound to it, and just, you know, it was kind of a different. And then there would be like that 70s groove jazz almost.
Yeah, with a lot of like wah pedals and kind of.
Yeah, like I think it would be a good soundtrack just to buy.
Yeah.
That was that good of music.
I liked the piano theme that they kept coming back to when the hobo would look at his lawnmower and like just yearn for a simpler life, and, you know, kind of it did a really good job of kind of evoking these emotions that they wanted the audience to associate with what the hobo was going through and what he was trying to, what he was really fighting for the whole time.
A lot of the music set the tone for what was going on in the movie. Like when he was riding into on the train tracks like that,
yep.
I think it was like a guitar kind of music.
Yeah, it was a lot of like different people, like old chorus people, you know, just like humming and saying, like, it kind of sounded like the opening of an old Western or something.
Yeah, yeah. I think every genre of music was hit at some point in time in the movie, and well done.
Yeah.
Play some of it in intro and outro.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find
some of that keyboard. That keyboard, it was somewhere where they were in the hospital and the legs were hanging from the ceiling.
Okay.
It was that music when that was. When that scene was going on.
All right, I'll try to.
Spooky, but it was synthesized, so it was kind of cool.
Okay.
I almost got like a Friday the 13th. No, like a Halloween. John Carpenter theme.
Yeah.
Too. Which is something I want to suggest, but later.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the dialogue in the movie. What did you think? I mean, clearly, for me anyway, the dialogue kind of matched the insane violence and stuff that was going on. There's a scene where the guy, what is his name, Ivan, Slick's brother, and Slick are kind of walking up to kill the hobo, and at one point Ivan just says, "It's a beautiful day for a skate rape," and he's wearing two ice skates, and then he like proceeds to just stomp into.
Don't say that. You don't say that when you're walking around like downtown Los Angeles.
No, not really.
Just turn to your buddy and you're like, "Hey, you know what a good day for?"
He slices the back of the hobo with his skates at one point, and then like later on, or I guess this is a little bit before. It shows like right when the hobo buys the shotgun and kind of goes off on the town. There's like a pimp that grabs a young hooker on the street and she's reading a book. And he says, "Stop wasting time on homework and get back to the block." And then the hobo, of course, like steps in. And there's just I feel like the dialogue is very I mean, it's just as stylized as the violence and the production design and everything else. What did you think about it?
Yeah, it's definitely over the top, and each line is delivered with a new sense of creativity. Like, they don't say the same thing over and over. Like, they make something up that just catches you off guard, which is awesome because, you know, some movies are just like, "I can't live without you." Like, you hear that all the time, or "He changed my life." I don't know.
Yeah.
And in this one, it's just how grotesque can you be? How creative can you be with the English language?
Yeah.
How many one-liners can you get in that aren't the same?
Yep.
Like, kind of thing. It was pretty excellent. It definitely surpasses the love that I had for Blind Fury.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should remake that as a Grindhouse with Rutger Hauer as the character again.
Reprising his own role. So
I still kept laughing because I was like, getting rid of crime one smell at a time, which is what I thought he originally said. Like, that should be the tagline for Blind Fury the remake, because that's one of its senses.
Nice.
And so it would link the two together. Yeah. Maybe Hobo with a Shotgun becomes Blind Fury. He gained his vision back within the last 20 years, became Hobo with a Shotgun, but then loses his vision. Oh, wait, he's... Okay, yeah, I guess that wouldn't work out. Maybe a prequel.
Yeah, I had to look this up because you were talking about the tagline or whatever, and
I remember the tagline.
Well, I just had to look up the tagline for Blind Fury because I remember that one was ridiculous, and that one is, he may be blind, but he don't need no dog.
Yeah, we talked about that on the podcast we did on it.
Yeah, that's
like, crazy. Is dog spelled D-A-W-G? And we're like, no, it's a C-N-I dog, but it doesn't make sense because he has a sword.
Right.
Sword.
So,
like the ending of this movie?
Yeah, let's get to the plague. So this is
All right. This
is one of the parts where, like, I mean, I'm sitting there watching the movie with an audience full of critics and people like that in
smelling their own farts. Boosh.
Good one. In Utah at Sundance, and everybody's having a really great time in this movie. And then as soon as the plague comes in, you can see I feel like you could kind of sense the vibe of the room turning slightly. Like, some people were really on board with it just because it makes very little sense, and other people were like, all right, this is the point where this movie kind of loses me. So what did you think about the introduction of the plague and their involvement in the movie towards the end of the film?
Yeah, they came out of nowhere. Like, all of a sudden, these guys are involved, and I think there was one scene where they were fighting the monster from Watchmen, maybe?
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's kind of tentacled octopus thing, yeah.
I was like, okay, that'll make a sweet crossover. But, yeah, I mean, I thought they were fairly necessary because up until this point, the hobo has been just wrecking shit. And so there has to be a challenge where shotgun shells just aren't going to do it.
Yeah.
And so you need these guys that for some reason are, like, completely made out of, like, metal boxes and things like that.
Yeah.
And stuff, but they're still mobile. So, you know, as far as the physics behind the plague, I'm not gonna go into that. But yeah, I thought they were a necessary evil for the movie because we needed something for the hobo to basically get owned by before coming back and doing his thing. Although I think the plague themselves are kind of they don't really side with Drake or the hobo. They just side with chaos,
yeah,
and destruction. So, you know, I think at one point they like turn away from him because they need to bring the girl into the plague. Like, I think that's another movie on its own, The Plague, right there.
It is, actually, because I just pulled this up. I'm getting ready to read it. They're talking about Jason Eisner is talking about doing a spin-off movie featuring the plague. So in an interview, he said there's a whole mythology behind them. They're basically like demons. For me, there's nothing beneath their costumes. To me, they've been around since the beginning of time, probably had tons of other crazy armor, riding on horses, etc. You see in their lair, they have a bunch of bounties crossed off, and one of them is Jesus Christ, another is Joan of Arc. And he says that he's written a treatment for the actual spinoff, and I'm going to quote him here again. He says, it's like a crazy chase film. It's about two ambulance drivers who have an unconscious person in the back of their ambulance who don't know a bounty is for the plague. The plague are doing everything to stop the ambulance, and the ambulance drivers are using everything they can to stop the plague. It also goes a little into their history and how they started and what they've been through. So I don't know, that it seems like you just said, like, there's so much that you can do with these characters because they are just kind of thrown in there at the last minute, and you really don't get any sort of backstory whatsoever except for that one cool little look into their lair where they have, like, the Easter Bunny and other people just crossed off as if they've murdered them throughout the years. I mean, I think that, as crazy as this movie is, up to that point, it just gets even crazier with the introduction of the plague, so... I was one of those people who really liked that direction. Like, if you're going to go over the top, go as far as you can, I think. And that's what this movie does pretty well.
Exactly.
So what did you think about the actual ending of the movie in that? I'll let you. What did you think about the end?
I was kind of pissed off, I guess, because, you know, there could be more movies, but... You know, you got to do what you got to do. Necessary. I mean, a necessity for a tragedy, if we're going Shakespearean here, which I am. You know, spoiler alert. So the main character has to die. The person that you are behind has to die for the tragedy to work.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what we got.
Yeah.
It was a comedy. It wasn't a comedy. It was a tragedy.
What did you think about Abby, the kind of stripper with the heart of gold character?
I think she was more than a stripper.
Hooker with a heart of gold.
There we go.
Who basically, she gets her hand completely destroyed by a lawnmower. Yep. And
she stabs the guy with her ulna / radius.
Right.
The sharpened bones of her forearm.
Sharpened bone.
There's two bones there, so she had two. It was kind of like a...
That part, man, that just, like, when I was in the theater, I was like, my God, like, what are they doing here?
You didn't stand up and go, yeah!
I was just in...
Justice!
I was wrapped. I was all right.
You soiled yourself.
Yeah, basically, but...
I puked blood for weeks.
I mean, you know, you're talking about the...
Yeah.
The physiological... like implications of this movie, how
not only did she stab somebody with it, but she lifted a sewer drain lid with her bone.
That's what I was getting ready to say. That
those things are heavy to begin with, but then there's like a 200-pound guy attached to it,
hanging from it as well, and then
sure, it's broken.
And she's just been completely mutilated from the elbow up, basically. Like, she's just fighting through that pain like nobody in the history of the world has ever fought through pain before, basically. But
I like how the idea of going into shock isn't anywhere near this movie, where people just get completely mauled and they're missing vital organs and they're still like alive talking on the phone.
Yeah.
Talking in general, and you're just like, I would have checked out if, you know, paper cut style. Like, that's it. I'm dead. Whatever.
Yeah. So you want to do some concluding thoughts?
This movie is excruciatingly violent, and there are very few people who are going to, quote unquote, enjoy it. So tread lightly when it enters your Netflix queue.
Yep. Or your Quickster queue.
Oh, F off.
Go ahead.
And you know, it's not, like, it's comedically violent, but it is really violent.
Yeah.
So don't think it's going to be like a slasher movie where, you know, like Friday the 13th, let's say, or Halloween, where people are going to get stabbed. No, it's much, 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 much worse. But if you can handle that kind of stuff and, you know, enjoy pretty crude humor.
Yeah.
And more power to you, my brother.
Yeah.
And sisters.
Indeed, indeed.
If a girl likes this, there's two questions. How awesome are you, and are you legally insane in any way? start to ask her, like, sociopathic questions. The same with guys. Like, if people, you know, I don't know. Like, I was watching 30 Rock today, and the bald guy that works there asked Jenna a question. He's like, she was trying to bring an EMT back. That was there earlier that day. She was going to ask him for his phone number or something. And he's like, yeah, there's this sociopathic question that you ask. It's like, if your mom dies and you meet somebody at her funeral, but you don't get his name, like, how do you get into contact with them? And Jenna's like, well, you got to kill your father. And he's like, that's the sociopath answer. He's like, you answered it right. Make sure.
So you're saying that anybody who legitimately likes Hope with the Shotgun is probably a sociopath?
If you're getting ideas on how to kill people from this movie,
yeah,
you might need some help.
Yeah. I mirror Tyler's thoughts on a lot of this stuff, and not just on that last point, but on the movie in general. There is a lot of like really kind of funny stuff in here. If you can get past all the ridiculous violence and stuff like that, there's this little subplot with a bear where Rutger Hauer's character, it's implied that he carries around a picture of a bear with him at all times, because at one point he just sticks it into an empty frame at Abby's apartment.
Yeah.
There's some newspapers that kind of detail the hobo's exploits throughout the city, and they have like a lot of kind of pun-filled headlines. The one that I wrote down was Hobo Stops Begging, Demands Change, which I thought was pretty awesome. So, you know, there's a lot of kind of funny stuff mixed in with all the depravity. Yeah, I think that's how you say that.
Depravity.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, I think this one, Tyler, I've seen it twice now, and I think it loses a little bit on the second viewing. Like, you know, you have that kind of novelty filled first viewing, which is pretty magical if you're into this kind of thing, like I think we are, and you know, sense of humor wise. But then once you know what's coming, it kind of, its flaws start to become a little bit more apparent, like on the second time around. It's just like,
that means we're just gonna have to watch more and more grindhouse films until we're completely messed up.
I think that's what they want, but maybe, I don't know.
Challenge accepted.
With all of that said, if a spinoff featuring the plague comes out, I will see that, because that was,
I want that.
The most ridiculous part to me, but
I want the prequel that connects Blind Fury to Hobo with a Shotgun.
That's, yeah, that would be good too. Maybe you could write it, man. I don't know. Maybe maybe he's looking for work, but
no, you're gonna play the hobo.
Oh, okay, all right.
Because he was a hobo in Blind Fury too.
Yeah, I think he was like some sort of agent, but then.
He was in Vietnam, and then
he was a wanderer for years after that. So. Cool.
Yeah, it'll be like 1999 Chicago, maybe, and like you just get up off a bus and you're blind. It's basically a melding of the two movies. So somehow you're blind, but you get a shotgun as well.
Yeah, and then at the very end of it, I have to get my sight back somehow.
Oh yeah, no, definitely.
Okay.
But this one, you're gonna have a dog.
Okay.
Which contradict the tagline of Blind Fury.
Right. Oh man, that's so meta.
Like it'll be blind hobo with a fury shotgun.
This is sounding worse and worse. So let's cut this up.
It's coming to pitch meeting.
Let's go ahead and rev up the Apple II if you're so inclined. Let people know what we're going to be watching next week.
Yeah, no, I've got a good feeling about this. Well, we're going to keep with the theme of homelessness by watching Hoosiers. Starring Gene Hackman and the Indiana basketball college team, and, you know, good times.
It's been so long since I've seen Hoosiers. I'm honestly not sure if you're joking right now. I don't remember if there's a homeless character in that movie or if you're just...
Well, a Hoosier is usually, so the term itself is a bum.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
I think.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll learn all kinds of things next week. And if you guys...
You've been to Indiana, Ben?
What, have I ever been there?
You ever been to Indiana?
I have, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I grew up in an Indiana town, had a good-looking mama who never was around, but... No, sorry, that was a Tom Petty reference. No, I have been to Indiana when I was a little kid. I don't really remember much about it, but... If you're from Indiana and you've seen Hoosiers, send us an email. Let us know if life is really like that. You can do that at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. You can subscribe for free to this podcast in iTunes. Leave us a review. That would be great. Check us out on Facebook. We are on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. We have a couple new Twitter followers I want to read. This one is going to be a mouthful, so pardon my mispronunciation, but Pansy XEH South. I don't really know how to pronounce that in one real word, so I didn't. At Shibley Smiles, at Cinematic Method, at MyFilmViews, and at JOIEMV5. So thanks for the follows, guys. We appreciate it.
Hey, Ben.
Yes.
You know why I think Hoosier means bum?
I don't know why.
Okay, well, Hoosier is the official name of someone from the state of Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
But in other parts of the country, the word has been adapted to other uses. In St. Louis, Missouri, the word is used in a derogatory fashion and similar to hick or white trash.
Okay. And
I guess that's where I picked it up from.
Yeah, that would explain a lot.
Hoosier also refers to the cotton stowers, both black and white, who move cotton bales from docks to the holds of ships, forcing the bales in tightly by means of jack screws. I don't know what that is. A low-status job, it nevertheless is referred to in various sea shanty lyrics. Okay. Shanties from the Seven Seas includes lyrics that mention Hoosiers. So
okay.
That's where I drew my knowledge from. I don't want to offend anybody from the state of Indiana, but I grew up with the word Hoosier as some type of derogatory term, apparently.
Right. Okay, well.
All right.
The more you know. All right. So let's wrap up the character name game for this week, and it was Terrence Terry Mann. Do you have any idea what movie that character is from?
Terrence Terry Mann? Was that Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
Nope. A little bit.
Was that Paul Rudd's character in Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
That was not, no.
Is it a Paul Rudd character?
No, it's actually, this is kind of a trick character name game, because this movie was re-released in theaters this past...
Ooh, okay. Don't tell me anymore then. Okay. So it's The Lion King 3D.
Terrence Terry Mann.
Oh, was that James Earl Jones' character from Field of Dreams?
It was, yes.
Yeah!
Sir. Nicely done. Yes. So James Earl Jones, of course, voiced Mufasa in The Lion King 3D, which came out in theaters this past weekend.
Did you get my meta joke that I said on Twitter the other day?
What was it? Repeat it for those of you who heard it.
In the re-release of The Lion King 3D, Mufasa says no as he's trampled by water buffalo or wildebeest, whatever those things were. And it's meta. Why, Ben?
What
am I referring to?
So first of all, the reason that James Earl Jones would yell no is because in the Star Wars Blu-rays that just came out or are just getting ready to come out, George Lucas has added Darth Vader yelling the word no when he kills the Emperor at the end of Return of the Jedi. Oh. And James Earl Jones, of course, voiced Darth Vader. And I didn't get this connection. I had no idea what you were talking about. I thought you were just making that reference. But then when you're saying, oh, okay, it's Mufasa who yells no, James Earl Jones, of course, is the same, voice yelling no. So there is a meta aspect there.
So stupid, because if you watch Revenge of the Sith and he yells no from his Frankenstein table at the end, you're like, that is laughable. Like,
yeah.
That is... I mean, they had a pretty good movie, and then at that point, it was just like, they shit the tank. And so George Lucas is like, I was so moved by that shitty point in that movie that I'm going to add it to, some would say, the best one of the series, but I'm not going to agree to that. But, like, the end of the first trilogy, you're gonna put that in again?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone tells him anything. Like, there are all only yes men at his disposal, and if you disagree with them, I'm pretty sure you're fired.
Yeah.
And just disowned from Skywalker Ranch forever and ever. And I think he lives in like a bubble where nobody can tell him he's doing an awful, awful job.
Yep.
That's all I have to say about that.
I tend to agree. All right, we'll leave it at that. Let's go back and forth and let people know where they can track us down on the internet this week.
Ben, you don't want to play a little up your specs?
Oh, do you have one? Okay.
Yeah, I do.
All right, let's do it.
All right, up your specs, the game where, your confidence can win or rue the day. Our guest today, as always, when there's only two people on the podcast, is Ben.
Yes, thank you.
Ben, why don't you tell us what you do for a living?
Well, I am into...
Shut up. Who cares?
Okay.
No. All right. Yeah. Everyone knows the rules of the game. I'm not gonna. I didn't even bring it up. I'm not even gonna read it. So you get to pick which category I'm going to give you the clue to, or the specific, and then you have to guess the movie based on the category of which you picked, which was either year, director, or star.
All right. So I'm going to go with star first.
You're going to go with star. Okay. Now be careful here. Who was the star of 1993's Pelican Brief? Who would be the first listed star of the Big Book movies in 1993's Pelican Brief?
Man, that's such a good question. Because I know Julia Roberts and Denzel Washington were in that, and I'm going to say Julia Roberts.
Oh, good guess. It was actually Julia Roberts.
Nice.
You get a gold star for that one.
Cool.
All right, of the two categories left, there's no one to bounce any more thoughts off of.
No.
So, yeah, nice job.
Let's go with director.
Ooh, director. I was hoping you'd say that for the last, because it's the most difficult of the three.
All right.
Who directed 1963's The Sword in the Stone?
Oh, man.
Disney classic, of which all King Arthur stories spin from, I'm sure. Just that one movie.
Jeez.
There wasn't a King Arthur legacy before this movie, I don't think.
It was created in 1963.
Somebody brilliant at Disney came up with a complete history for British kings.
Dude, I don't know. I don't have any idea.
Yeah, you'll, like, remember how I said one time you wouldn't guess, like, you would have been able to guess that in, like, a million years?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know if you guessed this one in a million years.
Okay.
Wolfgang Reitherman. Wolfgang Reitherman, I'm going to say.
Wow.
Yeah, probably shouldn't have bet any money on that one.
Okay.
Ooh, that was excruciatingly difficult. But you're 1-0. No, you're 1-1.
Yep.
And let's see if you can go 2-1 with the last category, year. What year did the movie Pee-wee's Big Adventure come out?
Oh, man.
Directed by Tim Burton. Starring Paul Pee-wee Herman Rubens. Hot pleasure here at one point in time. Not a lot of people know that. And now he's back as Pee-wee Herman, and no one remembers.
I'm gonna say 1988.
Ah, 1985.
Ooh, okay.
The year of our Lord, Anno Domini.
Yes.
85.
Okay.
So close. Yeah, Pee-wee's Big Adventure. That started it all, man. It went Pee-wee's stage play or whatever he was doing, and then Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and then the TV show.
Ah.
Which did not know at the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Have you ever seen that?
I have not, no.
Wow. We need to do that one. That is a freaky deaky movie.
All right, yeah. We'll do some things with, like, maybe a little bit more legitimacy to them before we go back to the craziness that is Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
I don't have as much to say about legitimate films, sorry to say. Isn't that sad?
It is a little bit.
I wanted to do a Not Just a Movie, like, series in October where we finally watch all the Friday the 13th movies if they pop back on Instant Watch. So,
oh, man. Maybe.
We can do legitimate movies for the actual Mother cast, and then you can join me for the Shitfest 2011, where we watch all up until, like, what, Jason X?
Yeah.
Oh, then we have to watch Jason versus Freddy. Ooh. So I guess it'll be included in it.
I've already seen that one.
Oh, well, then you're already head above of me.
Yeah, it's pretty awful.
Awesome.
Okay, well, let's go back and forth.
Yeah, nice job on up your specs.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I'm honestly surprised I got one out of them with the way that you've been making them so difficult for me recently.
Yeah, I like making them difficult in front of a guest.
Yeah.
If it's just you, I'll ease up a little bit.
Okay, all right, fair enough. So let's go back and forth and just tell people where they can track us down on the internet this week.
You can find me at, well, you can't really find me anywhere right now because I'm kind of closed off.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still talk to me on the Not Just New Movies Twitter if you want. I'll continue to make movie related jokes.
Yep.
Throughout the week, so stay tuned.
Are you planning the Poltergeist 2 and 3 review, or has that been abandoned?
No. I'm busy writing something else legitimate, so I'm going. I think I've got a lot written, so I'm going to spend a day writing the Poltergeist reviews. So okay. Look for that. Okay. Yeah, I said the end of the week, but I never got to it.
No, fair enough. That's all.
Say within the year. I'll get it within the year.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah.
So you guys can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing at geektyrant.com, which is where I put up all that Raiders of the Lost Ark coverage from last week. You can read my reviews at filmonic.com and notjustthemovies.com, and you can hear me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. Music for this episode comes courtesy of the Hobo with a Shotgun soundtrack. And as Tyler mentioned, we will be watching Hoosiers starring Gene Hackman for next week. So check that out along with us. Shoot us an email or leave us a voicemail. Let us know what you think of it. Let us know what you think of any of the movies that we've talked about on this podcast. And as always, thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week.
Go back and listen to Weekend at Bernie's.